Thank you, Sean. 1989 was a long time ago. Good evening. Well, I can already tell you that the sermon that I'm going to give you tonight is going to be way ahead of the one that I gave in Houston, Missouri last Sunday. I have a tendency to cough when I talk a lot, so I pop a cough drop just before I start, which I did down in Houston last Sunday morning. And I carry cough drops in my shaving kit just for things like that, so I don't have to go digging, and I've always got one there. Well, apparently, my aftershave has sprung a leak in the shaving kit. Try to concentrate with that in your mouth. I have a fresh cough drop in my mouth tonight. We sang 231. Is that what it was? Songs or sermons? I hope you all pay attention to what you're saying. Tonight you sang that your tongue cannot express the sweet comfort and peace of a soul wrapped in Jesus' love. That's a concept that the world doesn't understand. There's a lot more to those words. There's a lot of their points made in the other verses of that, but that's the one that seemed to stick out at me tonight, that you know you're doing what you're supposed to if that's occurring in your life. Now, I know life's life, and it's not going to be 24/7, but that should be your goal. That kind of fit in with, I guess, where I thought I was given to start tonight, which is where I'm going to start, and that's in Proverbs. First chapter, I'm just going to start with the first verse. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. And in my Bible, I've got little subtitles. And right there at verse 2, the subtitle for this book is purpose. And then it goes on to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment and equity, to give subtlety to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion, or discretion. That's what gives you sweet comfort and peace, is being able to take those verses and use that as a purpose in your life. I've got some definitions and commentary things that run through my Bible on the bottom of the page and in the sidebars and stuff. And it's like any other thing that's written by man. You got to watch what it is. You got to make sure that it matches the scriptures. But in this one, it says to know wisdom is to understand the skills of successful living as it pertains to your soul. And I thought that was pretty well put. We heard one of the many facets. We heard a very good sermon this morning from our brother Dan on one of those facets of the souls, of the skills of successful living as it pertains to your soul. That's wisdom. We got instruction also out of that sermon. To give subtlety, going on, verse 4, to give subtlety to the simple, To the young man knowledge and discretion, the wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. To understand a proverb and the interpretation, the words of the wise and their dark sayings there is riddles, things that you don't understand, things that you've got to figure out because it's just beyond you, especially if you're coming out of the world. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. That's the first part of there in verse 7. We know that that's not to be afraid of him. That's to respect him, to obey him. Everything else is of man. But fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother. For there should be an ornament of grace unto thy head, and chains about thy neck. My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, come with us, let us lay in wait for blood, let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them up alive as the grave and whole, and as those that go down into the pit. We shall find all precious substance, and we shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in thy lot amongst us, and let us all have one purse. My son, walk not thou in the way with them. Refrain thy foot from their path. For their feet run to evil, and make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. And they lay wait for their own blood, and they lurk privily for their own lives. Sir, the ways of everyone that is greedy of gain, which taketh away the life of the owners thereof. Don't think I've got anybody within this room this evening that's going to go out here and waylay people, hurt the innocent, rob them, do any of the things that it describes here. But if you take a look at how that applies to us, that can be verbal. That can be our actions. That can be grown out of envy or pride or greed or anger or any of those things. And we can do that to people without even thinking. Because of what we are. We're humans. They say that we have a Proverbs in the New Testament, is the way it's sometimes referred to. It was something that was written pretty much for the Jews. Called the Book of James. I think one of the first things that strikes me about that it was true that it's not, or that it's for the Jews. It doesn't start off talking about our faith like it does when they're talking to the Gentiles or when it's talking to other people that were in that dispensation of time that had embraced the gospel of Christ. Because if you take a look at all of those books. Well, let me turn to one real quick here, and I'll instead of this is the way most of the books of the Bible start. The books of the Old Testament start, if it's to a Gentile or if it's to a Christian. And I'm just using 1 Peter as an example now. Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to the strangers scattered throughout Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia. Boy, I would have to pick that one. Elect according to the foreknowledge of God the Father through sanctification of the Spirit, unto obedience, sprinkling out the blood of Jesus Christ, grace unto you, and peace be multiplied. That's what tells me that was a book to the Christians. Because there's two words in there that were unknown to the Jews. That was grace and peace. Their whole world was ceremony, externalism. Stand up and act like you do it. Stand up and act like you're religious, but it's not in your heart. But anyway, that's just a side thought. Back to James. James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes which are scattered abroad, greeting. It's to the Jews. my brethren, and he starts right in. No flowery introduction, no big oratorical setting you up for what he's going to talk about. None of that stuff. He starts right in on them. He says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into divers temptations. What a way to start a book. Knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. But let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, comma, wanting nothing. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. For he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. For let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. Let the brother of low degree rejoice in that he is exalted. But the rich in that he is made low, because as the flower of the grass he shall pass away. For the sun is no sooner risen with a burning heat, but it withereth the grass, and the flower thereof falleth, and the grace or the fashion of it perisheth. So also shall the rich man fade away in his ways. Blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. This morning, our brother Dan he'd read a passage, and then he'd say, you know, it's human nature, and I'm going to paraphrase you, Dan. It's human nature to have somebody be standing up here reading that, and you're out there saying, boy, I hope so-and-so is sitting in the audience. They need to hear this. When it should be, the thought is, boy, I'm glad I'm hearing that, because that applies to me. And that's true. That's very true. A while back, we were in Grand Junction, Colorado. I enjoyed a sermon from our brother John Bell out there. And one of the things he began with was a question. How many of you out there would raise your hands if I asked you if you were Christians? And he'd say, I would dare say that all of you raised your hands. Well, now, okay, but now how many of you are sinners? And I dare say that all of you would raise your hands. Then he would ask, okay, how many of you steal? And I dare say you wouldn't raise your hand. How many of you lie? And you wouldn't raise your hand. How many of you gossip? See, now we're getting down to the points, to things where you got to admit what you do. Nobody'd raise your hand. Well then, if you don't do any of those things, then how can you be a sinner? Now, are you really a sinner? We hide behind things. We hide behind what we want to represent. We get into what I just read here in James, and you go through life's experiences, you experience those things. If you don't, you shut yourself up in a room, and you don't go out and meet the world. How do you handle those things? How much damage does that do to you that when it occurs to you time after time after time, it changes your behavior? And then when it changes your behavior and then you come in here, you have to hide what is your behavior. We got a very good object lesson one time, and I think this was down in Phoenix, and I think it was Brother Mosier, I'm not sure, was using a passage in the Book of Mormon about the flaxen thread. And he had somebody get up there, and of course we didn't have any flaxen thread there, so he just used regular sewing thread, and I think it was Joel. And you know, Joel's a pretty hefty guy. And he got Joel up there and he put his hands together and he wrapped just some sewing thread around Joel's wrist once and says, can you break that? And of course, Joel broke it. He says, that's the flaxen thread. So he wrapped it around her twice. He says, can you break it now? Joel broke it. So he wrapped it around her about six times. A little harder, but Joel broke it. So he wrapped it around her about 20 times. And now it was hard for Joel to break. That's how we use sin. That's when you let sin come in, how hard it is to get rid of it if you don't break it the first time. If you let it into your heart, this time it ain't much. Next time, well, it still ain't much. Pretty soon, it's starting to get a little normal. Pretty soon, it's controlling your life. Blessed is a man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord had promised him to them that love him. By letting that wrap around your hand and wrap around your hand and wrap around your hand, figuratively speaking, you're not enduring temptation. You're succumbing to it. You're letting it take control of your life. You're becoming a slave to it. You're not free in the Lord anymore. And it affects the way you think. It affects the way you perceive things. It affects your behavior, therefore. And it remakes your reputation. Because you may think other people aren't watching. They watch me all the time. I can tell when I do something wrong. Going on over to verse 19. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. Wherefore, lay apart all filthiness and superfluity of naughtiness, and receive with meekness the engrafted word, which is able to save your souls. But be ye doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. For if any be a hearer of the word, and not a doer, he is like unto a man holding his natural face in a glass. For he beholdeth himself, and goeth his way, and straightway forgetteth what manner of man he was. And you don't even know you've done it. Satan wraps those strings around your wrist that subtly, to where he's got you bound down. But whoso looketh unto the perfect law of liberty, notice it said perfect law of liberty, and continueth therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deed. If any man among you seem to be religious, and bridleth not his tongue, but deceiveth his own heart, this man's religion is vain. Pure religion, and undefiled before God and the Father, is this. And you can't phony this. You can't act it out. You can't make it fit what you want it to do. You've got to understand what this instruction is, and it's an instruction. To visit the fatherless and widows in their afflictions, and to keep himself unspotted from the world. I hope we all know that that doesn't tell us to go out and find every widow and orphan in town here and visit them. Yeah, that's what it says, but it's talking about your spirit. It's talking about your frame of mind. It's talking about how you perceive things. That's what it's talking about. The reason they use those words and that particular phraseology, I guess you'd say, back then was that was the bottom of the society pile, I guess you'd say, the fatherless and the widows, because everybody was supposed to, you know, there were some pretty rigid rules on how to take care of widows and orphans and everything. And if you really were a widow and you really were an orphan, you were the dreg of society. Now I'm going to step on my own toes. Chapter 4. From whence come wars and fightings among you? Come they not hence, even of your lusts that war in your members? Now to me that says, Roger, you got a temper. Roger, are you arrogant? That's what it says to me. Roger, are you selfish? Ye lust and have not. Ye kill and desire to have and cannot obtain. Ye fight in war, yet ye have not, because ye ask not. What makes us Christians do that? What is it that makes you angry? What is it that makes you want revenge on people? It's the anger. It's the things that happen in your life. It's the things that drag you to the point to where you no longer have a vision of where you want to go. You think you got to stop and put out all of these, what do they call them, spot fires, brush fires. I just met a young man a couple of 3 weeks ago that has learned that lesson quite well, I thought. It's my grandson, Trevor. We go down to his graduation in San Antonio, Texas. And one of the first things he said was, he says, you know, I just love boot camp. He says, I love this basic training. He says, if I had a cell phone with me, he says, I'd go through it again. I like it that much. And he's telling us stories about what they did to him. Big important things like, I forget what they call their work suit, their ABUs or something. And apparently they've got pockets here somewhere to put pins, you know, just like a pin pocket up here. So after a week or two, between his classes, he started putting his pins in his pocket. Well, his TI, they call them TIs, I guess, nowadays instead of DIs. He come out of a classroom one day and he had these pins in his pocket and this TI just went off on him. He just went ballistic on him, screaming at him nose to nose and wanting to know what that was. And of course, Trevor didn't have any idea what he was talking about. And finally, he pulled his arm up and he says, what are you doing with that pin in that pocket? Trevor said, well, it's a pin pocket, sir. The guy said, did I tell you to put that pin in that pocket? What makes you think you're smart enough to put that pin in that pocket? You don't put that pin in that pocket till I tell you to put that pin in that pocket. Do you understand me, Airman? Trevor said, yes, sir. Didn't make him mad. You know why? Trevor understood. He says, I understood that they had to completely tear me down and build me up the way they wanted me. He says, because that's going to be my responsibility from now on, is to think that way. To think the way they want me to think, because they've got a reason they want me to think that way. Because of the jobs that I have to do. Well, you can turn that right around and put it with everybody in this room right now. Do you understand what your long-term goal is when it comes to your soul? And do you understand all of the heartache and confusion and stress and punishment that your soul will take and how you're going to handle that? It sure made me stop and think. Of course, I got a taste of that when I went through the police academy way back in eons ago, whenever that was. And we had to do it all the time out here in the field, handling problems. But since 1997, I had started to forget that principle. That we have a life. We have things we do. There's things that we run into daily out here in the world. I don't care whether we're at work, at play, at school. I don't care where it is. And if we let it, we tend to start micromanaging things instead of, sure, you got to manage them, but keeping in mind the long-term goal of what it's all about. Let me read that again, what I just read. Because I've got to take what my grandson told me about why he could take that abuse for, 7 weeks? And he's still taking it because he's still learning and he's still dirt as far as they're concerned. From whence come wars and fightings among you? From whence come wars and fightings in your life? Come they not hence even of your lusts that war in your members, of your own emotions, of your own urges? Do they come because of our ego and our pride and our sense of self-worth? Ye lust and have not, and that applies to that. Ye kill and desire to have and cannot obtain. Ye fight in war, yet ye have not, because ye ask not. Ye ask and receive not, because ye ask amiss. How many times do we ask amiss? I want to go back to what he told me in our little sacrament service down there. He says, I pray all the time. He says, and I don't pray to come out on top, and I don't pray to be first. He says, I pray to do what I'm supposed to do. I pray for strength to do what I'm supposed to do here, because that's what's right. Well, I didn't see a whole lot of arrogance in that. Ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. Do you think that the scripture saith in vain, the spirit that dwelleth in us lusteth to envy? But he giveth more grace, wherefore he saith, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble. Submit yourselves therefore to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and then purify your hearts, ye double-minded. Be afflicted and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to heaviness. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. When I started reading there, I said that was for me, and it is. But I can probably safely say that I'm not really alone and needing to be reminded of that. I know that's nothing new to any of us. But it sure helps me, I know, to read that every now and then and get a check on where my soul is and where my attitude is. Because where my attitude is, there's my actions. Speak not evil of one another, brethren. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judges his brother speaketh evil of the law and judges the law. But if thou judge the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is one lawgiver who is able to save and to destroy. Who art thou that judgest another? Over the years, I've been through a few ministers' meetings, I guess you'd say. Some of them are pretty contentious over issues. Some of them get quite contentious over issues that are on the floor. Some of them get contentious year after year when they're on the floor. Invariably, when it gets to a point to where your frustration level is clear up to here, as is your blood pressure, some wise person asks for a season of prayer. And it starts off kind of slow, but then when people start coming down, you know, they really get earnest in asking the Lord for direction. What do we do here? What do we do about this? And to make a long story short, you know what we have been told as ministry time and time and time again? When we really get down and do not ask amiss for those problems, you know what the Lord tells us every time? Quit fighting. Quit hating one another. And these aren't quotes, but these are points. I will take care of things, but quit fighting. We forget. We let our emotions, even the ministry, we tend to let our emotions get ahead of our soul, I guess you'd say. And we end up making emotional statements that rile each other up. How often do church members do that? Speak not evil of one another. I'm rereading it. Speak not evil of one another, brethren. He that speaketh evil of his brother judges his brother, and judges his brother speaketh evil of the law. But if thou judge the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge. We're not judges. None of us are judges. We're supposed to be the doers. Chapter 5. This is another one that's going to step on my toes. Verse 7. Be patient, therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. Behold, a husbandman waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth, and hath long patience for it until he receive the early and latter rain. Be ye also patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord draweth nigh. Grudge not one against another, brethren, lest ye be condemned. Behold, the judge standeth before the door. Take, my brethren, the prophets who have spoken in the name of the Lord for an example of suffering, affliction, and of patience. Behold, we count them happy which endure. Ye have heard of the patience of Job, and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. But above all things, my brethren, swear not, neither by heaven, neither by the earth, neither by any other oath, but let your yea be yea and your nay be nay, lest ye fall into condemnation. That strikes a little chord there. I believe that's also in Matthew, if I understand it, and he calls it forswearing there. Forswearing is the art of being able to not tell the truth under oath. It was an art form then in the Mideast, and it's even a greater art form now. All you got to do, and it's an art form within our community here, all you got to do is listen to a bunch of politicians and lawyers for one thing. They never tell you what you ask. They never answer what you ask. There's an article in the Reader's Digest, or not the Reader's Digest, in the National Geographic this time about Iran. And it talks about something like this quite a bit in that article. They call it artful pretending. I'm not even going to try to give you the Persian word for it, since Iran's Persians. It's spelled T-A-A-F-O-R. Like I say, I'm going to leave it alone. But I thought about the scriptures and what it talks about forswearing when I was reading that in there. And they will dance around the subject for hours amongst themselves and lie to each other through their teeth while they're smiling. They're very smooth and suave about it until they figure out what the other guy's really lying about. And they'll waste a lot of time doing that. They really do waste a lot of time. There's no yea, yea, or nay, nay. And that's not just to say that we're to mimic this thing mindlessly, because this, again, is an attitude. This is a way of letting that kind of a spirit get to you where you hide everything, and then you never tell the truth. Everybody does this to a certain degree. Some more than others. Some less than others. But it all comes to the same conclusion each time. And it's a negative one. Is any among you afflicted? Let him pray. Is any merry? Let him sing psalms. Is any sick among you? Let him call for the elders of the church and let them pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayer of faith shall save the sick, and the Lord shall raise him up. And if he have committed sins, they shall be forgiven him. How many of us misuse that? You don't have to answer me. When you get administered to, when you ask for administration, what are you wanting? Is it a selfish want? Is it a greedy want? Or is it something that the Lord can really do something about? Is it something that you need a blessing for, to correct you? I've done it. I've had to do it. And I'm satisfied that I will have to do it many times in the future, to ask for administration for something to correct me. Confess your faults one to another and pray one for another that ye may be healed. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. And I don't know how many times that I've heard the prayer of a man availeth much. And they leave out those three words. And it's not outside this church that I've heard that. It says the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. Elijah was a man subject to passions like as we are, and he prayed earnestly that it might not rain, and it rained not on the earth by the space of 3 years and 6 months. And he prayed again, and the heaven gave rain, and the earth brought forth her fruit. I don't think I'm ever going to try that. I have no reason at all to ever be that, what do you call it, self-centered, to think that I can imitate that, because the rain and the drought and all that, to me, was not the point of that passage. It was his frame of mind. It was his subservience to his heavenly master. And that's why he was able to accomplish the things that he wanted to do, is because of his subservience to our heavenly Father. That's the example that I get out of that. And I fail. Brethren, if any of you do err from the truth, and one convert him, let him know that he which converteth his sinner from the error of his way shall save a soul from death, and shall hide a multitude of sins. I don't think I can say that a better way. The sweet comfort and peace that tongues cannot express of a soul wrapped in Jesus' love. How does that compare with what was his name? The governor of Minnesota that was a wrestler, Jesse Ventura. When he was making all the publicity and he was doing all of the things, because he honestly, according to what I understood from people in Minnesota, he ran as a joke. It was a joke. He really never expected to get a... And they did enough publicity on him that he got elected, and then he didn't know what to do. So they had to send him to governor's school, and they really did. But in all the stuff that they were going through with him, one of the interviews they had with him, they asked him about religion. And his reaction was, religion's for weak people. We strong people don't need religion. How sad. How very, very sad that somebody that, well, to elect somebody that to an office that the state elected him to is a statement in itself. But how sad that someone that was in charge of the welfare of the state of Minnesota for 4 years had that kind of an attitude about people's souls. If you were going to try to defend that at all you could say was he didn't know. All he knew was strength and arrogance and hate and being mean and hard and selfish. I'd say, what other words can I use? That probably will work. That was his career. That's what he did for a living. Was he thought that way? To him, a strong man is somebody that could stare down the opponent or smash his face or whatever it is they do in the sham that is supposed to be a sport. Who's the strong man? Who's the strong man in your life? Who do you emulate? Who do you look up to? What is the foremost thing in your thoughts every day, and therefore the foremost thing in your actions? That's a reference back to Deuteronomy. Do you say, I am a Christian? Do you say, well, we don't say that. We don't say, I am saved. That's the Baptist. Do you indicate that? And we tend to do that sometimes. Or do you keep your mouth shut and just do it like Mark Hill did said that time? You know, that'll stick with me forever. The statement he made, he says, you know, you can testify of Jesus Christ out in the world every day. And there's even some days you can talk about it. And that has stuck with me because that probably stepped all over my toes. And I try to do that. King Benjamin was a special king as far as I'm concerned. And I have closed with this many, many times, and I'm going to continue to do it. There's instructions. We have instructions in the Bible and the Book of Mormon that has to do with our behavior and our souls and our spirits. However you want to describe that, however you want to talk about that. And what it takes to fix them and what it takes to be skillful in living according to the gospel. It teaches you how to be strong in the gospel. It teaches you how to function in the gospel. And I can absolutely guarantee you that when you follow the instructions that the Lord has put in His scriptures for how you operate, you will succeed. They may kill you, but you will succeed if you just read the instructions and do them. But who's got time to go through life? And every time something happens to you, you go whip out your scriptures and run down to the particular verse or passage that pertains to that and read it so you know what to do. I don't believe a whole lot of us have time to do that. So King Benjamin puts it this way, and I need to remember this just as much as anybody else. Page 223. I'm going to start with verse 48. And finally, I cannot tell you all the things whereby you may commit sin, for there are divers ways and means, even so many that I cannot number them. And as far as I'm concerned, that's an understatement. But this much I can tell you, that if you do not watch yourselves and your thoughts and your words and your deeds, wow, and observe to keep the commandments of God, and continue in the faith of what ye have heard concerning the coming of our Lord, even unto the end of your lives, ye must perish. I don't know whether they still got it or not, but I know at one time they had a sign out at East Local over the inside of the door, at the top of the door, as you went out. And the sign said, you are now entering the missionary field. We need a sign. We need that kind of a sign. Because as we walk out these doors, we need to be reminded who we are, where our strength is, what makes us strong, how it makes us strong, what the long-term goal of us even being in here is, and how to deal with it outside these doors, outside our hearts even. That we may enjoy the sweet comfort and peace that tongues cannot express. I thank you for your time.